and welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. This week, as always, I'm joined by Stefan Chin.
Hey-o.
What's your tagline?
Why is it a pair of pants? Think about it.
Sam Schultz has joined us as well.
Hi.
How are you finding TikTok these days?
I haven't downloaded it yet. I'm not ready for that. And I feel more and more obsolete as the days go by. And I see you talking about it. And I see Sari talking about it, especially Sari. Because she's never known anything I haven't known until TikTok. Mm-hmm.
How's that feel?
Really bad. It legitimately feels horrible.
I'm the youth coming for you, old man.
What's your tagline?
Brain.
Sari, hello.
Hello.
Now that you know about some music, what's your favorite TikTok song?
Oh, I like the one. It's the meme where a lot of indigenous folks do the dance to it, where it goes like da 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 da
da da. Yeah, that one.
I like that one a lot. It like brings me such joy.
See, I hate this.
Take that, Sam. And what's your tagline?
Burples.
And I am Hank Green, and my tagline is, there's a hole in my basement connected to poop.
Well, it's kind of true for everyone.
Yeah, but it's a direct connection in my basement.
You got sewer gas?
Yeah, I had sewer gas. Mm.
Did you figure it out?
I did. I just shoved a shirt down the hole. So no, fingers crossed that'll work.
No, that's right.
Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We also will give a little bit of plumbing advice. We're playing for glory, but we're also keeping score and awarding sandbucks from week to week. We do everything we can to stay on topic, but judging by our previous conversations, we won't be great at that. So if the rest of the team deems your tangent unworthy, we'll force you to give up one of your sandbucks. So tangent with care, unless you're me, in which case all bets are off, baby. I'm not winning this season. And now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Sam.
You're asking me why I glow? Well, friend, I don't rightly know, because I'm just a wee insect. But I'll give it a go. Here's the thing that I suspect. Two enzymes, they intersect in my cute little rear end, and I think I am correct. That one is luciferin, and the other I am Darren. To say is luciferase, and combined they start barren. A green flash that, with some grace, tells predators, give us space, cause we aren't all that yummy. A flash could also showcase that we want to get chummy with a firefly honey. So there is my best guessing, even though I'm a dummy. As to why my butt's fluorescing, my shiny ass is a blessing. It helps me in expressing thoughts my bug heads possessing.
So the topic for the day is things that glow, of which fireflies is just one thing. Fireflies. And there is lots of glowing in nature, which is nice because sometimes it's dark and we need to bring the light to the darkness. Metaphor.
New York Times best-selling author, Hank Green, everyone. You end a metaphor, You say metaphor.
That's the last lines of the new one.
Yeah, that was a sneak peek.
Sari, what is glowing?
I would define it as emitting light in some way.
Mm. I was a little torn. So does a street lamp glow, or does that shine? Or is that the same thing, functionally speaking?
I think generating light, yeah. Mm. Releasing photons.
I think, too, if you kind of glow, you kind of have to, make light, but, in a very sort of, comforting motherly way. Mm-hmm. So, a street light can glow, but it depends on my mood. It depends on how it makes me feel.
So would an anglerfish make light in a comforting, motherly way and then just eat you?
Yeah, because I'm comforted, so I'm swimming toward the light. Mm-hmm. And then if it was shining, I'd be like, my eyes.
Would you say glow sticks are motherly?
Are they soothing?
I like to look at them.
I don't usually associate them with comfort.
Yeah, that's party time glow.
Yeah, like my my eighth hour of dancing at a rave is not like that reminds me of being a little babe snuggled upon my mother as we drift off to sleep. But maybe, I don't know. How do you guys not rave? Is that just me? Am I the only raver in that room?
I've never raved.
I obviously have never raved.
Yeah, I haven't either. But if we're being honest.
Oh yeah. I would say if anybody here, you'd be most likely to rave.
I think that's
true. I probably got close a couple times.
Well, what's glowing? We never even talked about it.
I took the broadest possible definition. I looked at fluorescence and phosphorescence and luminescence, mm-hmm. and they're all just like emitting light in various ways, whether they absorb light at a different frequency or generate it through a chemical reaction like store it up. And then re-emit it later on in time.
I love those ones to store it up.
It comes from the Proto-Indo-European root gel, which means to shine, with derivatives that relate to bright materials and gold.
Oh.
All right, everybody. So I guess now that means it's time for which is the part of the podcast where I have brought in three facts, but only one of them is true. Mm. And the rest of you have to decide either by deduction or wild guess which is the true fact. And you can play along at home at twitter.com/scishowtangents, but make sure you listen to the facts first, because it won't make any sense if you don't otherwise. And I've brought in facts about Foxfire, which is not just what my in-laws call their web browser. It's also the name of the glow of bioluminescent fungi that grow on decaying wood. And people have been noticing this glowing fungi for a long time, going all the way back to Aristotle. And I'm sure before that, but Aristotle described it as a cold fire. Over the centuries, people have found clever uses for this glowy fungus, including one of the following things that was used by Americans during the Revolutionary War. Fact number one, Betsy Ross stitched the stars of the first American flag with threads dipped in a mixture of bioluminescent mycelium, which made it so that they would glow when in the perfect darkness of the night, which everybody thought was really dope. Or fact number two, the compass on board the first wartime submarine, which, yes, happened during the American Revolution, was hard to see because it was dark in there, so they illuminated it with foxfire. Or number three, members of the Culper spy ring, which was also a real thing during the Revolutionary War, would place a small batch of foxfire to signal that a house was a safe house so that members would know where they could find safety, even in the middle of the night. So we have these three facts. Betsy Ross made the stars of the flag glow, or we used it to make the compass and the first wartime submarine glow, or it was used to mark safe houses by the Culper spy ring, a ring of intelligence agents that operated around New England.
And true or false, those are that's real. Those are real? That's a real spy ring?
Yeah, that's a real spy ring. Okay. There was a real flag. There was a real submarine. All those things
were real.
There was a
real first American flag, yeah.
Whoa.
I cannot believe that the first one would have glow-in-the-dark stars and every other one would not have glow-in-the-dark stars after.
Well,
that's too good of an idea.
Maybe it wasn't widely available. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe a pain in the butt. Also, there are definitely flags with glow-in-the-dark stars.
Yeah,
I bet you can get those on Amazon.
There's no reason not to.
The other thing to note is that this wouldn't be a forever effect. It would just be a temporary thing.
I don't know anything about these mushrooms, but how long would it last? Maybe it would. Maybe you
they
can't
glow
even
while they're alive. So the glowing is part of their metabolism, and then so as they die and their metabolism starts to slow down, and I don't know how long, but I know that it's like. I think it's like days.
You just missed the flag a little bit. Keep them nice and moist.
Yeah. The submarine, though, what are they? Are they rowing? How does the submarine work?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
It's like
how it was powered.
Your legs stick out the bottom. Yeah. And
just on the bottom. They got flippers on.
What's the third? Oh, the spies. Spy that ring. One seems pretty reasonable, but everyone would know that it glows. Like anyone walking by will be like, oh, that's a weird glowy thing.
But you wouldn't know that it was marking the spy houses. You'd just be like, cool fungus, dude. not knowing that you are talking to the leader of the spy ring.
Is it a common fungus?
It is apparently fairly common.
Mm. Okay. Because there's not here. Do they have glowy fungus in Montana? Or is this an East Coast thing?
Well, it's also wherever Aristotle was.
Ah. where was Aristotle? I actually don't know.
Somewhere around that, you know.
Yeah. Where all the smart area. Guys were from back
Italy,
then.
Greece, something yeah. like that.
Would they have to cultivate the fungus? Can you tell us anything? Like, did they just like pick a tree that had fungus in it and then bring it back to their house? Or did they like bring the fungus and then grow it outside their house?
They would have to gather it and then put it in a place.
Mm. Got it.
The other thing about this fungus is that it often doesn't glow particularly brightly. Like, it's not going to be like right up in your face that like, look at this guy's okay. like glowing door. Mm. You'd have to be paying a fair amount of attention to notice right. the glow.
Right. Sarah, you pick first.
No, I want to go last.
But you're so smart.
Sarah maybe knows something.
Yeah, I may not have suggested a fact for my fact off, and then Caitlin was like... You're already talking about this.
I will go with the spy houses.
I will go with the submarine. Ooh. For similar reasons as Sari.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I'm going to go with the submarine, no. too.
God dang it.
I tried to do the submarine like a year ago for some different episode, but I couldn't find enough to make it a whole fact off. Perfect right. torf, though.
Yeah, so this was potentially suggested by Benjamin Franklin, who actually apparently used foxfire to read at night because, like, candles were, like, dirty, and that was good for being used in the submarine because the submarine was made out of wood. made out of tarred wood, which sounds pretty flammable to me, but also because there's only so much oxygen in there and you don't want to be sharing it with flames.
Right.
It was like a piece of wood with the fungus still in it. So the fungus was still like thriving on that wood. And then he would like hold it up to the compass and the barometer to see how deep he was and which direction he was going in to try and plant bombs on the side of other ships, which never worked. And he was eventually captured. His obituary said the pilot of this craft was, "This officer is the only man of which it can be said that he fought the enemy upon land, upon water, and under the water." And the submarine, I don't know if I told you, was called the Turtle, which is a really good name.
Oh, yeah. But wait, how was it propelled? Did they have like a steam engine in there in a wooden boat?
I couldn't tell you.
I think he had a little bicycle in there that worked a screw or whatever.
No, it had oars that were like had seals between the oars. And so he would like turn the oars and then push the oars. Yeah, so there's like oars sticking out of the side of the turtle with like rubber seals on the end of them so that water wouldn't leak in. I can't believe this guy survived.
I would have used up all my oxygen just trying to like row the oars and getting tired.
This is so bad.
No, I'm wrong. It wasn't oars. This picture definitely shows oars sticking out of it, but this picture of a model of it shows that there are pedals that you push that turn a propeller.
Okay.
And I don't know how he was supposed to deliver a bomb with this thing.
He would go above the water and he had a little like, he had a bomb with like a screw on it and he would like put it into the side of the boat. But then what I read was that he went to the boat and the boat had metal plating on it and he couldn't do it. So then he just went home.
It's got a safety weight in the bottom so that so it doesn't turn upside down, which would be bad. And foxfire, the reason it's called foxfire is not because of the animal, but is the same root as the word false. So it's like fire, but not real.
Oh.
False fire.
There was a restaurant in my hometown that was called Foxfire, and everyone knew that that's where you went if you wanted to meet older ladies who had money.
Wow.
Did you go and meet an older lady?
No, but you could see it from the freeway because they had like a fire on the roof of the restaurant going all the time.
You always know if you need to get out of your life, you can always go meet an old lady there.
Wow.
I would love to see Ben Franklin's reading apparatus with the Foxfire, though.
It wasn't a reading apparatus. It was just a log with some fungus on it.
That's gross.
Yeah, that's an apparatus.
I think so. There's nothing wrong with a stick. Sticks aren't gross.
He had a mushroomy stick next to his bed.
He was dedicated. He needed to read. He needed to stay ahead of the competition.
I guess.
So. I don't know who the competition is, but whoever Ben Franklin's competition is, I'm sure he was a pretty competitive guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Betsy Ross thing was pretty much a lie. Like, there have been people who have used Foxfire for decorative purposes before, and they didn't even necessarily, I don't even know if they had safe houses for this spy group. Mm-hmm. I just read about the spy group. It was all lies.
That's disappointing.
But you could probably figure out how to make an American flag glow if you wanted to sell that product on Amazon. But I'll leave that to the listeners. Next up, we're going to take a short break, and then it'll be time for the Fact Off. Welcome back, everybody. Sam Buck totals. I've got one. Sari's got one. And Sam has two.
And how many does Stefan have?
None.
Stefan has zero. Stefan's got nothing. All right. And now it's time for the Fact Off. Two panelists have brought science facts presented to the others in an attempt to blow their minds. We each have a Sam Buck to award to the fact that we like the most. And to decide who goes first, I've got a trivia question for you. Milky sea effect, or mareel, is when large areas of seawater glow thanks to bioluminescent dinoflagellates. The largest milky sea area ever documented covered how many square kilometers of ocean surface? Hint, they used satellite data to figure this out.
Oh. I'm going to say 3,200 kilometers, square kilometers.
Oh,
okay.
I'm going to say 100,000.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. That's, now that I've said it, it seems like way too big, but yeah. But let's go.
The answer is 15,400 square kilometers.
Well, so Sari is closer.
Just barely.
I will go first. So there's a lot of philosophical and biological debate about what death looks like in organisms. It's basically a systemic breakdown and shutdown or degradation of cells. But in one species, the roundworm C. elegans, there's a surprisingly obvious marker of their passing called death fluorescence. Mm. Basically, under UV light, a compound called anthranilic acid fluoresces bright blue. It's produced by little granules throughout the worm's gut, and we're not entirely sure what the gut granules do as organelles, but there are just a lot of them, and they make this glowy thing. And so when C. elegans dies, whether it's because of a lethal injury or peaceful old age, the cell death starts at one end, usually the front, and propagates to the other over several hours. And this wave of death is started by a flood of calcium ions, triggers processes that burst cells, and explodes those little gut granules. Mm. So under UV light, there's like a wave of blue fluorescence as the worm dies across its whole body. And having this clearly visual indication of death is just like wild. You can watch videos of it, and it can help us understand how cell death might propagate in more complex organisms, for example, humans, or as a clear indication of death in lab tests that involve measuring lifespan. These scientists experimented a little bit with this and were able to knock out proteins in the worm to stop the cell death wave because of injury, not because of old age. And so that could potentially be a first step in helping us develop medicine to stop necrosis from things like injury or infection or something damaging like that. So like reducing the amount of fatal injuries because we don't set off this cascade.
So they stopped the cell death. Did the worm not die then?
Yeah, it didn't die. I don't think it died as quickly. I think it died eventually because they didn't like Frankenstein it. But and here is a video.
So I'm watching death spread throughout a worm.
Yeah, it's like kind of eerie if you're thinking about it. It's like I'm watching these worms die. It makes me think that if people were able to see this centuries ago, for some reason they shined UV light on these nematodes, this would be very like a poetic inspiration for thinking about death. It's like, we all glow blue and then go dark.
So like they die and then they start to glow?
Yes, asterisk. When do you declare death is? So their cells are still vaguely functional, but then once they outburst, then that's when they start glowing. So that's why I kept it kind of vague, because I didn't feel like becoming a philosopher for this episode of the podcast. So it's just like a wave of death generically. Yeah. And you can interpret that to mean whatever you want.
It may not be death, but it's definitely glowing.
Yes. And after the glowing is done, it dead.
Stefan, what do you got for us?
Okay, so some species of millipedes basically look identical to one another. You just couldn't tell them apart with using your own stupid eyeballs. But you could use DNA analysis to tell them apart, but that's kind of complicated. So researchers at the Field Museum in Chicago found that certain body parts of millipedes fluoresce under UV light. Specifically, their genitals glow different colors and in different patterns that are unique to the species of millipede. These aren't really like millipede dicks. There's male millipedes have a hole near their second pair of legs where the bluish sperm liquid comes out. And then their seventh pair of legs are adapted to transfer sperm. And so they like...
Can I just make you pause and tell you that you said bluish sperm liquid like I knew that already? You know, where their bluish sperm liquid comes out. You don't know where it comes from, but everybody knows that millipedes have bluish sperm liquid.
Yeah.
That's what they call it.
Clearly. So their seventh pair of legs are called gonopods, and they like dip them in their sperm hole, cover them in sperm, and then they run around trying to find a mate. So those gonopods have different features that are unique to the species. So there's like little spiky knobs or like bristly looking things. And under UV light, the differences are much easier to see between the different species. They don't know why the millipedes evolved this, because they can't, I guess millipedes don't have very good vision. They said they don't even know if millipedes can see color, and they definitely can't see UV. But from imaging all these different gonopods, they were able to condense. They thought that in their collection they had 12 different species of millipede, but there were actually only 8. And so they were able to more accurately identify the specimens in their collection.
I feel like it comes up a lot that people are like, we don't know why they have these glowy stripes on them, because the animal can't see them. But it seems like the animal just must be able to see them. And
they're lying to us.
Or they just don't know what the animal can see.
Apparently, we don't really know much about millipede sex either, because they do it in the ground. And if you take them out of the ground or put them in the lab, like, they don't do it. So,
Well, and if they do it in the ground, then it's extra hard to see anything.
Yeah.
That's the hardest place to see anything of all places, I'd say.
You didn't really have me until I found out that they didn't just glow, they glow different colors. Oh, color and light is very weird, you guys.
I feel sad that we can't see more of it.
Like, yeah.
Like, we can't see scorpions glowing and stuff. Seems like that would be useful to us.
We can, with a little bit of help.
I know, but I want to see them without help. I want to know they're coming.
I feel like I would get a headache if I was like a bee, if I had bee eyes where everything glowed intensely. Yeah. I wouldn't want to look at flowers. I like flowers now.
Wait,
like,
can bees get headaches?
All right.
I don't know. Okay, nobody knows.
I have no idea. I'm not even going to try to answer
it. Nobody knows.
Because someone who actually knows things about animals will come after me.
So it is now time for us to vote on our favorite fact. Are you guys ready? 3, 2, 1.
Stefan.
Sari.
Okay. I just liked a lot. His presentation style was great. He was waving his arms around a lot. It was really doing it for me.
Wow.
You got to do a little
bit. The subjectivity is just getting out of hand.
I see. Yeah. This audio podcast needs a visual component during recording.
Well, you should have seen him. He was doing a hell of a job.
And now it's time to ask the science couch. We've got a listener question for our virtual couch of finely honed scientific minds. This is from @greatpretending. Does putting a glow stick in the freezer actually make it, quote, last longer? And if so, why? I mean, I assume yes, because it slows down the reaction, whatever the reaction is that's producing the light. Mm-hmm. There has to be some kind of ongoing chemical reaction that is releasing that energy. And the molecules will hit each other less frequently if they are moving less quickly.
Yeah, they'll hit each other less frequently and also with energy.
Less speed, yeah.
Yeah, in the collision, which means that there's less likely for something to happen. They got to hit hard.
Does it glow less brightly as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if you want to save up your glow stick for, like, you know, tomorrow's rave, you can have a diminished glow stick for tomorrow. Yeah.
It's like,
once it warms up, I guess it might start glowing good again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just, like, compared to the temperature. So, like, while it's cold, the reaction will be going slower and it will be glowing less good. But if you heat it back up again, then it'll be glowing hot and bright for as long as the reaction progresses.
And it's nice because, like, then your glow sticks are all cold. So you start dancing and you're hot. Ooh. And you put your cold glow sticks on your body, put them in your mouth because you like to, I don't know.
Shouldn't put them in your mouth. Should you? I feel like you shouldn't put them in your mouth.
That's what I want. Okay. So, like, the kids would crack them open and fling them at you. Was that really bad?
It's not horrible. It's not like you cyanide or anything. The things inside in the big part of the tube is biphenyl oxalate and some sort of dye that colors it neon. And then the little crackly sound is there's usually a small glass cylinder filled with hydrogen peroxide, which is something you might have in your medicine cabinet. It's really good at, like, removing blood stains. I realize that's like a serial killer kind of thing to say. I don't know. Some people have periods and you bleed all over. So suck up that laughter. But yeah, so that's the reaction that happens is biphenyl oxalate gets oxidized by hydrogen peroxide, which produces a bunch of different compounds, including one that is unstable, that decomposes into carbon dioxide and releases energy, which the dye absorbs so that electrons get excited and then fall back to their less excited state and release photons.
Very science-y.
So, like, the chemicals that you're spraying on people are, like, hydrogen peroxide, biphenyl oxalate, just, like, minor irritants, but I don't know. Like, it won't...
So don't take a bath.
It's dilute hydrogen peroxide. Yeah.
Is the crackle, like, little chambers that you're breaking? Or what? Okay.
I think it's one chamber of, like, one cylinder of hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can break it a bunch of times, but you only need to break it once.
I love breaking it a bunch of times. Chewing
it comes out faster that way.
Oh my God.
Breaking it a bunch of times will also speed up the reaction because you'll just, like, have more points of contact instead of, like, just having one hole.
Mixes faster. Tips for the rave. You always come to SciShow Tangents for your rave tips. If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to at Tangential Otter, at Rebecca Rebec 4, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions for this episode. Final scores. It's a tie game between Sari and Sam. Stefan and I come in and last, sharing it with 1 point each, which means that Stefan is still in the lead.
Still
in the lead. And Sari and Sam are 2 and 3 points behind, respectively. And I am 9 points behind. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's easy to do that. You can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show. And it helps other people know that our show is good because we want more people to listen to it. I don't know exactly why. There are business reasons. There are personal reasons.
It just makes me feel good, too.
Yeah.
We do, however, love all of our SciShow Tangents listeners. And it's such a joy to have you be here to listen to our voices. So thank you for being those folks. We love it. Thank you so much. If you want to tweet out your favorite moment from the show, you can do that too. And finally, if you want to show your love for Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Stefan Chin.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the wonderful team at WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our social media organizer is Paola Garcia Prieto. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you, and remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing.
glowing butt fact.
Glowing butt fact. There's a lot of glowing butts. A lot of bugs have glowing butts, including glowworms, which aren't worms, but the larvae of certain types of Australian fungus gnats. They live on the ceilings of caves in what the University of Melbourne describes as chandelier-like webs that consist of several snare lines covered in sticky mucus. And to lure their food into these snare webs in the dark caves, they light up their butts and they trick nocturnal insects into flying towards them and getting stuck, just like how a moth does to a porch light, basically. And bonus butt fact, they don't poop. What? All their waste is, air quotes, excreted as light.
What?
You don't believe me? You don't believe the University of Melbourne, then? Bring it up with them, huh?
They gotta poop at some point. Maybe once they turn into bugs.
No, when they turn into bugs, they don't have an anus, and so they just have to live fast, die young, because they can't poop.
Okay. Mm.
It's like YOLO, but with no poop.
You only poop
Yopo.